Hello, everyone, and welcome. Thank you for joining me on Hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. I believe that to be 100% true, and I believe that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, reforms into the butterfly, and as if that wasn't enough, it then has to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. That isn't an easy task, I don't imagine, but neither is busting through the limits that society has placed upon a person. And today, my guests, and I should have changed my tag at the bottom, because not only do I have Sally, but we have Carmi joining us as well. Hello. So thank you guys for joining me. And just tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Okay. I am an Australian artist who stopped painting a couple of years ago to start Indie Renegade, which is a clothing line that shines light on university. And I did that. I stopped my career and started to do the clothing line because I have two neurodivergent kids and Carmi is my eldest. So you want to talk about you?
I need a script or something.
No, you don't. So what are your diagnoses?
I have a speech disorder called cluttering with recently as resurfaced with a vengeance.
You can hear her now. That's the cluttering, the very, very fast speaking and the pauses in unusual spots.
Yeah.
I have autism, ADHD, dyspraxia.
And a little bit of anxiety.
And anxiety, which I'm pretty sure is self-diagnosed, which you cannot trust at all.
And what else? You've got celiac disease as well.
Oh, yeah, I have celiac disease.
Oh.
I can't.
Well, you just have a couple things going on then, don't you?
Oh, and I have chronic insomnia.
Chronic insomnia, yeah.
Chronic insomnia. That I can't even imagine. I love my sleep.
Currently, I'm on 6 hours of sleep.
Yeah, she has an Apple Watch that tracks her sleep, so we know what's going on, so we can report it to. And
I also have audiobooks on it, and the Ravens Here audiobook, everybody, is great.
That's what she's listening to through her watch. But it also tracks her sleep. And last night she only had 59 minutes of deep sleep. So that's not very good for a 10-year-old.
No, yeah. 10 years old. Okay, that's good to know. I was curious how old you were. So Mom answered that, so you don't have to answer that for me. So what grade does that make you in school? Or do you guys do it by grades, or do you have like...
We homeschool, so I think...
I have no clue what my grade is.
Yeah, I think she – in Australia it's different, so I think she'd be going to sixth grade this year or maybe fifth, I don't know. We don't do grades. We're just kind of life learners, so we don't do structured schoolwork at all. we can't really. My kids aren't cut out for structured schoolwork, so we don't really do the worksheets and things like that. We don't do it by grade level. We just learn by
– Can you stop being silly, huh? Please?
We just learn by living.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I am a special education teacher here in the United States, and no child, whether they have an eligibility for special education or not, learns at exactly the same rate and in the same way. And so to have the ability or to make yourself have the ability, whatever was the case in your situation, to honor that and recognize that and be able to work with that with your children, that's beautiful. I think that's just absolutely wonderful. And go ahead.
We did it out of necessity. So.
And a lot of people do, but that's okay. So, Carmi, tell me some of the things that you like to do as far as learning.
I like to read, which is technically learning because it makes me better at spelling. Like, mainly how I learn to spell. Like sometimes I'll even read a word I don't know how to spell, realize that I read a word I don't know how to spell, and go back and study that word.
Oh, brilliant.
And then what about your videos and your science and things like that?
I do videos. Most of them aren't actually purposely educational. Like I like to watch comic book videos, but there's especially one channel I really like. I watch them on YouTube. But I think it's pretty educational.
Yeah, she watches a lot of science videos and animals. She knows a lot of animal facts. And
that is slightly disturbing and probably not suitable for YouTube.
Yeah, like a lot of animal facts that will surprise you. To make you go, okay. Don't need to know that.
A whale's fart bubble can hold a horse.
Oh, really?
Really?
And the butthole is 3 feet long.
What did I say?
All right, then. Hey, I mean, that's the kind of thing that kids like. So,
platypus sweat milk.
Say that again.
Platypus sweat milk.
Oh, I had no idea. You're teaching me, and that is so wonderful. That actually, I wasn't really going to say this, but now that you've inadvertently gotten me to it. See the name of this book? Those Who Can't Teach.
Yeah.
So this is my book. I actually wrote this book. And the reason
it's when I grow up, I salute you.
Thank you. The reason it's called Those Who Can't Teach is because every story in the book is a story about a family, probably similar to your own, that I know or I've had the privilege to teach. And I don't know if the saying is a worldwide saying or not, but there's a saying here in the United States, at least, those who can do, those who can't teach.
Yeah.
And I always hated, to be honest, that saying as a teacher, because it always made it seem like my profession was less than everybody else's. And when I was writing this book, I felt the Lord tell me, you know, that's how the people in your book feel. They feel that society looks at them as less than, but you learn so much from the ones that you know, the ones that you've taught. I've said for years that I've probably learned more from the students that I taught than what I taught them. Because it's facts like that. It's how to be a good person. It's just tenacity. And I had the privilege to work with hundreds of kids over my teaching career. And I learned something from every one of them. So, I really appreciate, and we'll get to this in a little bit when we talk about Indie Renegade, of how you describe, or how you have a section on your website that talks about the different terms. And what's kind of the right way and the wrong way to say things. So Carmi, can you tell me about your learning style?
I'm getting my Apple Watch. I need a second.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. Sally, do you want to talk a little bit about your son while she's, are you done already?
Ready? What's your learning style?
YouTube.
Yeah. YouTube. Watching videos. She's very visual. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Did you always homeschool, or did you try the structured school environment and then realize?
Can I answer this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Answer.
I forgot.
Okay. part of her difficulties. They went to a Montessori preschool. And both kids were reading. They started reading at age 3. They were just self-taught readers. And the preschool teachers said, yeah, so made my life easy.
Yeah.
The preschool teacher said, let's try and get her into school now, because she was really young, or she's going to be bored. And I was like, oh, no, I can't do that. I'll wait another year, because I didn't want her to be a young kid in school. So the following year I went to the local school and spoke to the principal, because she was very advanced. And I just said to him, you know, my child's really smart. And he said, oh, all parents think their kids are smart. And I said, well, here's what she's doing. And he just looked at me and said, she's going to be bored until the other kids catch up. And I said, well, when's that going to be? And he said, well, your guess is as good as mine. We don't just streamline classes till fifth grade. So I just walked out of there and said, well, I can't send her to school. And that was my first thought of homeschooling right there. I was like, all right. And we didn't know any homeschoolers. I just knew I couldn't send it to school.
Yeah.
So I know it was before any diagnosis.
And now I've read 1,000 books since age 5. And novels. More than 1,000 books. So the reading list only counts new ones.
Yeah, we keep track of her books that she reads for homeschool, because that was one of the things. So, you know, readings work, so we got to keep track to tell the education department. So I started keeping a list of her books that she's reading. Little did I know, a few years later, we'd be over 1,000. Like, oh, can you please stop? This list is doing my head.
Incredible. I don't even know, as old as I am, if I've read 1,000 books.
I've read over 1,000 books, actually. The reading list only counts new ones.
Yeah. She reads books 3, 4, 5 times. I've always got a pile like this on my desk that I have to add to the reading
that,
list.
I did that in around a week.
Yeah. I'm like, that's reading list that I have to add.
That is wonderful. My daughter is a big reader, and I was a big reader, but I don't know that we're, like I said, I don't know that I've read that many books. I've never counted, of course, but I'm 5 times older than you are, and I don't think I've read that many
books. I haven't read that many books in my lifetime.
My favorite book is Sky Dragon 2 by Ando.
Yeah.
Ando is my favorite author. I also really like the Warrior Cats series and Wings of Fire.
And what about your all-time favorite classic?
Call of the Wild. I love it.
Oh, that is a great book.
Mm. It's a wee bit brutal, but I love it. brutal. I've read about a cat being disemboweled.
Oh, stop.
So, what kind of things do you do for fun?
I watch YouTube. I read. I play with mom.
And friends?
I try to stay out of Ollie's way.
Yeah, Ollie's her brother. What about friends and going out? What do we do then? Beach?
Yeah. I lost. Play-Doh. I have it kind of just consistent of sitting on a bench.
Yeah, she's having trouble with playdates at the moment. She's getting overwhelmed. But we go to the beach.
That's something we're not going to share.
Yeah, we go to the beach a lot. They have been doing horse riding for several years.
Oh,
which
wonderful.
Is great. Equine therapy. So we've just moved a few months ago. So that should be starting up again in a couple of weeks, which we can't wait for. What else should we do? We go for bike rides, things like that.
We usually go for walks.
Yeah, walks.
She has to bribe my brother.
I do have M&Ms. I've got to bribe him to get out of the house for walks, for exercise. We have to
I would do it anyway. My brother.
Yeah.
He just gets it for the M&Ms.
He gets points for things that he spots, like 2 points for a dog. You know, 3 points for a swan, you know, and then he gets M&Ms according to how many points he has at the end. Otherwise, he won't go for exercise.
So what does robots? Why does he not want to walk? Is it getting away from?
Yeah, he doesn't like leaving the house. He gets a bit of anxiety leaving the house. He still does, but he just gets tense, and he gets really hot. And we live in the subtropics, so. Yeah. As soon as he's hot, which is, you know, a minute into the walk, he's just like, oh, I'm so hot, I want to go home. So he's quite difficult at the moment. He's not used to the heat here.
And it's interesting that you said where you live and the heat there, because I don't know if you can tell, but I'm wearing a sweater.
Yeah.
And you guys are our temperature high today was 3 degrees.
Oh,
Fahrenheit. So I don't know. Do you guys do Fahrenheit or Celsius?
No, we're in Celsius.
Okay. So
what do you mean Fahrenheit? That is.
Yeah, that's below zero. Really?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
We're at about 28 degrees Celsius. So.
Okay.
I don't know what that is, but I think it's probably.
I think that's about 75 or 80.
80, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Because my husband and I had lived in England for 3 years and they were on that scale. So I have a little bit of memory of kind of that. Conversion, but yeah, I kind of remember.
We're having rain here, a lot of rain this summer. So it's actually a lot cooler than it would be, but it's really muggy.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't make it fun either to go outside.
No.
Yeah. So if this is not something that you want to talk about, Carmi, please let me know. But we mentioned friends and play dates. Do you have friends that you interact with, but it's just the person?
I have one here, and I have only 2 friends that I actually keep in touch with.
So it's because we've moved.
The friends I keep in touch with. Well, should I say the names, do they?
Yeah, it's fine.
For the privacy, I'm good.
No, Will and Charlie.
That is very intelligent of you to know that.
I only keep in touch with Will and Delphi.
Oh, right.
I don't give a chance to Charlie. He doesn't have Discord.
About 18 months ago, we moved from where we were living since the kids were born in New South Wales. We moved. Yeah, so we left behind all our family and friends there because it was a very small beach town and the services there weren't very good. And because we homeschool, there wasn't a large community there. So we left and we moved 8 hours north to Coffs Harbour, which is still in New South Wales. And we're there for just under a year. and then decided, well, we're just going to keep moving north, and we moved to Queensland. So, you know, 5 months ago, not even.
Oh, okay.
So
you're still getting to know people in your area yeah. and people your age and all that's there.
I made two friends in Coffs Harbour, Will and Charlie. I only keep in touch with Will. He's the older one.
Yeah.
Okay. And is Will neurodivergent like you?
Yes, he is autistic, and I'm pretty sure Charlie has ADHD.
I think Will's ADHD as well. He's autistic and he's 13.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm 10.
Yeah. And that, unfortunately, is something that we find here in the United States, that people who have different abilities tend to find friends within that same community, but it's harder for them to be accepted by those who don't. And it sounds like that might be kind of the same way there in Australia.
Yeah. Our issue here with the friends we have here, they're lovely. The Kami's friend is a lovely, lovely girl, but
and they still be so much.
Yeah, but when we go out, I've got the two kids that I'm juggling, and they both have different needs. So
yeah.
Ali, my son, generally gets extreme anxiety, and he's trigger angry with his anxiety. So I'm always scaffolding him, and the two kids squabble a bit, and then when there's a friend involved and there's jealousy, it's a lot of drama when we go out. With the one friend who's lovely, and they're very understanding, thankfully, that I've got the two kids with both different needs. But it does make it trying. It's easier if we have people come over to our house, because then both kids can just go to their separate spaces if they need to.
Yeah. That I think that's probably very similar to families here in the United States. So I just had a question and it left me. Oh, so since this is a show about busting through limits,
mm-hmm.
You know, tell me, and Carmi, I don't know that you'll be able to answer this as much as Mom will, because Mom has been seeing this versus you living it. What sort of limits have both Carmi and Ollie busted through since they had
right.
the diagnoses or something?
Limits they've busted through. Well, the learning limits, we've all busted through that, because we've had to find a different way. Obviously, she's very bright, has a very good vocabulary, and I don't think she would have succeeded in school.
I have a pretty good memory, useless facts.
Yeah, just got a good memory, but short-term memory is dismal. So.
Oh, okay.
So I can say to her, can you please go do this, this, and this? And I'll have to say, you've got three things to do. Tell me those three things. And then two of them might get done. So, or she'll walk into the room, oh my God, I forgot. You know, like a lot of that stuff with both of them. So we've taken the learning on ourselves, and I think the kids are both just flying. I think they're both doing great. Therapies. We do therapies, but we've chosen the ones that are just suited for us. So we do equine therapy. We have a social skills mentor that comes over and teaches them, plays with them with STEM stuff. So they do robotics and Lego and things like that.
I don't know. They do it a lot.
Yeah, well, you have to tell them that.
I have.
Yeah, and just being really open with the diagnoses to people. I think some people are surprised that we talk about it so freely, but I think it's necessary. I think to break down those barriers that neurodivergent people have, I think it's necessary to talk about it and to be open, because no one would know that Kami's autistic.
Right.
No one would know that she's ADHD unless they spend a little bit of time with her. They can hear the speech disorder when she gets garbled, but other than that, she looks like any other child, and she's not like any other child, and she needs accommodations. So, you know, we're very open about speaking about that.
And that's wonderful. And I think sometimes there is a hesitancy to share because of the reaction that often comes with sharing that your child has this diagnosis or that diagnosis, or that they behave this way or they learn this way if it's different. And so I'm very appreciative. And that's one of the reasons that I have this show, is because when I wrote the book, I felt like there, you know, stories needed to be told, and that I was the vessel to tell the stories. But then I realized that there are literal millions of stories like the ones in my book. And in order to give people the experience so that they won't have that, oh, I'm sorry, type of reaction, you know, when they hear that someone has autism or someone has Down syndrome or someone has a traumatic brain injury, that it isn't looked at as a, oh gosh. I mean, yeah, it's different, but it doesn't have to be bad.
No, exactly. I usually wait till people meet the kids and then tell them, because I tell them first, you know, like if we're going to homeschool meet and I don't know the people and I say first, my son's autistic, my daughter's autistic, then they have a preconceived notion of who the kids are. So I let them meet them first one or two times. And then if the behavior becomes apparent, then I let them know right away, which with my son it does sometimes. But otherwise I'll just let them know, you know, in the course of the next few times so that they can go, oh, okay, well, they've already got a notion of what the kids are like.
That was an accident, wasn't it? She's like, oh, I didn't mean to do that.
That wasn't me.
It's perfectly fine.
So, yeah, I usually wait until they've met the kids and then they can form their own idea of what the autism and ADHD looks like for my children.
Yeah, and that's, again, that's such a beautiful way to approach it, because it is. I mean, we have a saying here, I presume it's all worldwide, that if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. Because every single person, again, it doesn't honestly matter if the person has any sort of diagnosis or eligibility for special education in the United States or elsewhere. Everybody is different. Everyone is unique. You know, many of us wear glasses. I have red hair. You can't see them anymore, but when I was growing up, I had lots and lots of freckles and it was really evident. You have freckles?
She does. Yeah. You got to look.
So many. Freckles.
Yeah, she does. You can't
see. Also, your hair looks more yellow.
Does it?
Strawberries.
Yeah. And that's interesting, Carmi, because ever since I was little, like, okay, this is red. This pen is red. That is not red. My hair is not red, but I don't like it when people call me carrots because they think my hair is orange.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Strawberry blonde.
Yeah.
Strawberry.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm okay with strawberry. I don't know. But yeah. So, I mean, I had all those differences and every single person has different things about them. And that's, I mean, each one of us is beautifully and uniquely made. Yep. So, you know, to automatically clump a person into a category because of whatever the reason is, disability, skin color, learning style, religion, whatever, is wrong. Because every person behaves the way they behave.
Everyone is unique, regardless of disability and not having disability. Every single person's unique. So, but the neurodivergent people, there's less neurodivergent people than neurotypical people, and generally their needs aren't met as well.
Right.
So,
right.
We need to ask for it.
Yeah. So, your equine therapy, interestingly enough, I didn't know that about you, but I used to volunteer at an equine therapy center near my home.
Okay.
So how long did you do that before you moved? I know you said you haven't started back up since you've moved.
They did it for about 2.5 years in where we originally lived. And then
it was such a good
time. Yeah. We missed that center very, very much. Mm-hmm. And then in Coffs Harbour, we did it in a few different places because we were trying to find the right fit, and we finally found the right fit. And then, we moved again. So, and everything has just been booked up. So we've just been on the wait list.
The horses at Malia's place had a few quirks.
Yeah.
Billy, one I rode, always wanted to have his nose up another horse's butt. And Maggie, I just could not get her going for the life of me. Rocky, he was a sweet boy, but I don't ride him anymore. And Percy, he was the last one I rode.
Yeah.
And he's like kind of robust.
Yeah. We miss the horses. The kids are great. They actually can walk, trot, and canter and do jumps at this point. So they've been
Both of them? That's awesome.
Yeah, they've come very far in their horse riding. We just thought it was going to start out like, you know, grooming the horses, and it just kind of moved on from there. So despite Kami's dyspraxia and her clumsiness, which you just witnessed a couple minutes ago, it's all together. She's upright, she's back straight, she's just brilliant. So the dyspraxia, it kind of disappears when she's got that control over her body, when that mind-body connection. You wouldn't know when she's on a horse.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
She says she doesn't trust her legs at all. She trusts the horse's legs.
Oh.
That's it. I forget I ever said that.
You explained it a little bit, but would you explain a little bit? Because dyspraxia is not something that is really talked about or is known. Dyslexia is finally starting to get some traction here in the United States, but dysgraphia, dyspraxia, the other ones isn't as well known. So would you mind describing what that is so my audience understands?
Sure. I'm looking it up.
It's basically when the brain doesn't get the messages through to the body very well. So it's just jumbled a little bit in there. So she drops things. She's quite clumsy. If someone's going to knock a glass over, it's her.
Okay.
She's going to actually read your definition.
I got it. I'm going to give us the technical definition.
Developmental.
Yeah.
Developmental coordination disorder. A child who developmental disorder marked by clumsiness in otherwise healthy children.
All right.
Mental coordination disorder may occur alone with other developmental disorders, such as attention
deficits, hyperactivity disorder, ADHD.
It usually continues into adulthood.
Yeah. So it's coordination, but it also affects speech as well. So her thoughts are more jumbled, so she'll forget what she's saying often. It's similar. So you know what apraxia is?
If you explain it,
Apraxia is when the mouth muscles and everything can't form the words. So the brain has all the words in there and the language in there, but the body can't get it out of the mouth. So apraxia is verbal dyspraxia. No, Jasper does though.
Delphi's brain. I'm pretty sure Delphi has like a light case of it.
So apraxia is verbal dyspraxia. So imagine that, but for your whole body.
Yeah. And equine therapy is such, I miss being at the riding center near me because it is amazing how, the center where I worked, and I'm sure where you guys have been, it doesn't apply to your children, but people who previously were not speaking speak after being on the horse sometimes. We had people who, you know, very similar to Carmi, with more physical than just dyspraxia, who were able to sit up on the horse eventually on their own and get that muscle tone in the middle of the body, and, you know, be able to do things on the horse that they wouldn't necessarily do elsewhere.
Our old therapist, hang on, let me just speak and then you can say. Our old therapist in the original place, she had an autistic boy who was completely nonverbal come and get on a horse, and he said his first word when he got off the horse. He said horse when he got off.
Yeah.
This is the very first thing he'd ever said.
After it's one just session. Amazing.
Yeah, it
it's
is.
Just, yeah. It's beautiful.
What do you
Yes, Carmi.
Can I, like, go?
Oh, you want to go?
Yeah, I'm getting antsy.
Okay, she's getting antsy, so Carmi's going to take off.
All right, thank you. It was nice to meet you.
She left.
That was a grand exit. Oh, I didn't know this was going to be an interview on a show.
She likes to she comes on Instagram, one Andy Renegade account, a lot, and does dances and silly things like that.
Yeah.
That's my girl. all day. She's in the kitchen doing things like that.
So I just recently sent a list to my email followers, and it said, you know, your well-being as a parent of a child with a disability. is very important because you often get forgotten about. But your job is 24/7, 365, for as long as your child is alive.
100%.
And how do you deal with that? That, I mean,
the mental load.
The mental load.
It's tough. I'm actually doing a lot better this year than I was before. I think because the kids are older, and I think I've done a lot of work through the therapies and through the psychologists that we have to just help myself. But I make sure that I get some kind of time to myself every day, either for a cup of tea or for a walk or a meditation, something. If you'd asked me a year ago, 18 months ago, I was, you know, I was 10 kilos heavier. I was sleep deprived, suffering chronic insomnia, very, very stressed. I'm on anxiety meds right now. I have been for a year, which was a game changer because then it took care of my insomnia, so I can sleep now.
Right.
But it's true. It's especially for us because we homeschool, so I don't get a break. And it's tough, but you have to know what your limits are and listen to your body. When your body tells you that you've had enough, you need to go have a break, make sure the kids are safe, and go take that break. Take the 15 minutes, make a cup of tea and sit down and read a book, or go outside and, you know, get some fresh air, even if it's just in the backyard or on the front doorstep. You know, just get your headspace back and take your time. It's essential, because if you don't, you fall apart. And I was that person who was falling apart. So, and my son's OT kept coming in and saying, forget about him. You need to get out. You need to go for a walk. You need to get some sleep. You need to get yourself a weighted blanket. You need to do whatever you can, get off caffeine, do whatever you can to fix yourself, because, you know, if you fall apart, the family falls apart. And it's true.
Right. And do you have centers? Like, I mean, we have daycares here in the United States, but typically the daycares do not feel comfortable having someone with a disability because they don't know how to work with them. So there have been a few centers across the United States that have popped up for people who are neurodivergent. Do you have any sort of places like that, or?
No, we don't. But where we've moved to the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, which, you know, there's a couple hundred thousand people here, which for us is just massive, coming from a town with like 13,000 people.
Right.
So we have a lot of services here which help. The kids have a support worker that comes over a couple times a week to play with them for a couple of hours, 3 hours a day. We have the mentors that come over. We do have homeschool groups that we can drop the kids off, and they often accommodate neurodivergent kids because a lot of homeschoolers are neurodivergent.
Right.
But we're not at that place yet. We tried when we were in Coffs Harbour. My son's anxiety kind of overrode everything, and he couldn't do it. So we'll get there eventually. I think when the kids get a bit older and a bit more independent, Carmi's fine. She's got anxiety, but I think her anxiety is more based around our family dynamic and what goes on with her brother, because he's a tough cookie. He's a hard one to deal with. But she is very gregarious, and she loves new things. And like, she's doing a drama course for 3 days next week, and she can't wait. So we have things like that that we can send the kids to. Well, one kid too.
So I do want to continue to talk about you and the fact that you were an artist and you've now changed, although you're still an artist.
Yeah. Always will be.
Yeah. It's coming out differently.
Yep.
Than what it used to. So tell us about a little bit more about that, and then let's start talking about ND Renegade, unless you want to continue to talk about the kids.
Oh, good. No, we're golden. So I am an Australian contemporary painter. I was painting large, kind of semi-abstracted contemporary landscapes, and I was doing very well, had a really great art dealer. But I had a studio that we built in the backyard that was my space, and I loved it. I was so sad to see it go. But painting is a very solitary process, and I was very, very separated from the kids and the family, and I was spending a lot of hours at nighttime painting alone, which was heavenly, but I wasn't involving the family, and, you know, I was just so separated. So I decided that I needed to make a change and do something that involved them a little bit more. And so I thought, I had the idea of Endy Renegade, of a clothing business that was about them. And, you know, I wasn't just like, oh, I want to start a clothing business. I needed to start a business that was about them so that they felt like they were part of it. Because I want to teach them how to be entrepreneurs as well. Because we, as I said, we homeschool, but we kind of life learn. So all our learning's wrapped up in what we do. So I, you know, I thought about T-shirts, and I couldn't find any T-shirts out there that were doing what I wanted to do. There are T-shirts out there that, well, at the time, there were T-shirts out there that, you know, said, like, you know, I'm autistic, you know, please give me space, those kinds of T-shirts, but nothing that was about being proud and just shouting it out there. And I realized that I needed to do something creative, and there was creativity in that. So I put down my brushes and started the business, and we were up and rolling within, I think, 3 or 4 weeks. We had our first sale.
And when did you start this, you said?
It was 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, January 2 years ago.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think it's wonderful. I'm going to share your website, and then I want you to just kind of, you know, tell us some more about, let's see, sorry, grabbed the wrong file there. Tell us more about the company, and, you know, kind of the transition for you and how all of that went.
Sure. Here we go. Yep, that's our homepage. That's one of my favorite designs, that neurodivergent line. That was one of my first favorite designs. All our T-shirts are tagless, as you see right there. That when we started, we just got a couple of samples, not a couple, a lot of samples of different T-shirts and hoodies and things, and just chose the most comfortable, most sensory-friendly items that we could find, because that's so important for neurodivergent people. We can't have tags or like really rough seams or anything. The fabric has to be soft because they just won't wear it otherwise. It's essential
right. For
them. So that was a big requirement of ours, to have comfortable clothing. And there's a lot of items on the store. So I have had a few complaints saying that it's not very, very ADHD friendly, because people get lost on the store.
Oh.
So many items, but you know, what can you do? I can't stop designing. I have so many designs in my head that I'm just waiting to put on there. I'm just trying not to upload it. So we have really bold designs that just say autist or ADHDer or neurodivergent, and we have some more subtle designs, like we have a T-shirt with just fans on it, because autistic people like to see fans spin. Well, not all the time, but a lot of them do. We have that one right there. That's I run on a different operating system. That speaks for itself, but it's you know, it's a statement, but it's not a huge bold design.
Right.
You know, we have advocate T-shirts. We have neurodiversity T-shirts, the one I'm wearing right now. So we have T-shirts for the family members and for the autistic and ADHD and dyslexic people themselves. And every T-shirt is supposed to just start a conversation. So, you know, if someone's got that ADHD T-shirt on, someone else might come along and say, hey, my kid's got ADHD, you know,
yeah. Tell
me how you handle it, something like that. We've had a lot of customers use the T-shirts to let their family and friends know that they are autistic, which is
awesome.
That T-shirt right there, the Neurodiversity Cables one, that's a big favorite, because there are so many techie autistic people out there. So that's a
And I'm not sure how big it's popping up on as people are. I think it's big enough that they can see all the designs and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is a big seller, and it comes in different colors. And I see this free worldwide delivery.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yes, we ship worldwide. We do print on demand. So we have print shops all over the world, and when an order comes in, the message gets sent to the print shop, to the actual company, and then they send it to the print shop that's closest to the customer. So then it gets printed and sent to the customer that way. So we are able to send worldwide, which is great.
Yeah. Can you see what I'm pointing to?
Sure. Yeah.
Can you talk about that? Because I don't even want to attempt to say that word, because I know I will not do it justice.
I mangle it too, because my heritage, I do have Maori heritage. But I'm first generation Australian, so mixed blood here. That word is the Maori word for autism, and it was coined by a Maori man called Kerry O'Pai, who wrote the medical terminology book for the Maori language.
Okay.
And it means in his or her own space and time. And for me, that is an absolutely beautiful way to describe autism. You know, it's not pathologizing it. It's just stating how the person is in the world. And I love it. I love the word.
Right.
And I want everyone to ask about it.
So how do you say that word again?
I'm going to mangle it, so I don't want to say it, but the line above the A is a long A, so it would be Takiwa Tanga.
Okay. Takiwa Tanga.
So sure I'm mumbling it because I have a heavy Australian accent.
So not only do you have this clothing line that is bringing awareness, but you also have this NDR grant that I was reading about a little bit before. Talk about this, please.
Sure. We were giving 10% of our profits to charity. And within the autism community, there is a lot of discussion about which charity should benefit from, you know, donations. And we couldn't seem to make anyone happy. So we still, when we have returns of clothing and things like that, we do donate those to charity now. So all our, when people say, oh, I got the wrong size, or, you know, we don't send it back to the print house, we tell them, we give them a charity to send it to, and it's an autism charity in different countries. So we still do that. But as far as donating profits now, we have started up the grant program. And that is because getting a diagnosis for many people are in different countries is very, very difficult. And there's different reasons why, but one of the main reasons is financial. It's very costly to get a diagnosis. Both my kids, it cost us a couple of $1,000s each. And that was actually with some government funding and some government help. So not all people are lucky enough to do that. And there are self-diagnosed autistics out there, which, you know, it's great that is recognized. However, sometimes the diagnosis is necessary for treatment and for support, and sometimes just for validation. So we set up the grant to help people, you know, with diagnosis to pay for it. So every time we hit $2,000 in the profit that we can give, we are donating that to someone to help with their diagnosis, to help fund it.
And so how do they apply, or how do you get their
names? We haven't done the first one is going to be mid 2022. So I set this up a month ago because it was too much of a headache. So we finished off the year donating to charity, and then I've set this thing up. So when mid 2022 comes by, I'm going to actually have a form there and have them fill it out. And I don't know how I'm going to choose. I'm just going to have to, you know, find the person that just needs it the most. I don't know. We have information on there for people, at least in the States, different avenues to get diagnosed that are free or low cost. But still, people in the States might need it. So we're just going to hopefully pick the best person and put the other ones on a wait list and just help as many people as we can.
That's amazing. That's wonderful that you can do that. And what another just, you know, wonderful thing, not only the clothing, but that. And then now here, this is something that is talked about so much, but still not talked about enough. And I'm still not sure that there is a consensus on, in fact, I was just reading, a friend of mine had posted, I don't know about in Australia, but here in the United States, there's this, like, do we say special needs? Do we say disabled? Do we say unique? Do we say extra? And there's, you know, there's all this terminology surrounding an attempt to describe as well as respect the differences.
Yep.
And so I really appreciated when I was browsing your website and saw that you had these three main words defined, and then how you talked a little bit about, you know, that that one is a group, one is a person, one is the differences. And I just, whether you've designed this completely on your own or you had help, your website is absolutely brilliant.
It's all me. I've done it all. Every part of the business has been me. Yeah, slowly. And if I'd known at the beginning what it would take to get to where it is now, I wouldn't have done it. I would have been like, I can do that. But forget about it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and hopefully you were able to do it in little drops and it wasn't just one big thing. Nice. But it is. I mean, it's just absolutely stunning. Just everything that you have and that you have going on. And I haven't even touched on, you know, probably the majority of what you have. You have your blog here, which again, you've got your littles. They're not too little, but I still call them littles.
Yeah.
You know, and just the different articles. I like this title, The Advantages of Autism.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the advantages of autism?
I can, actually. I've just done this with my kids. Just a couple of days ago, we made a chart saying the good and the bad, because my son is so focused on the bad. And I had to explain all the good, all the creativity that comes with it, the out-of-the-box thinking, the perfectionism, you know, getting things right and making sure that they're right, the very detail-oriented thinking. People that aren't autistic miss these things. So the fact that an autistic person, not all, but often can hone in on those details and pull something out that someone else just wouldn't see and wouldn't think of, it's great. We need those. We need those brains. We need this different kind of thinking to solve the problems that are in the world.
Yeah.
You know, we need it. And the fact that autistic people, they're so reliable, you know, when they're on a schedule, you know that they're not going to break that schedule. You know that they're going to show up on time. You know that they're honest to a fault, that they're rule followers. All these things are such benefits. And the fact that it comes to them easily, it doesn't override their struggles at all, because there are some serious struggles with being autistic too.
Right.
But we're always focused on the struggle. The medical profession focuses on those struggles, and rightly so, because they need to, maybe not rightly so, but they need help. Like, the struggles do need to be addressed. It is a disability. However, we need to focus on all the positives, because those positives are there and they're just as important, if not more important. And I think that if we do focus on the positives and we bring those to light and we work on their struggles, then we can make these people feel whole and genuinely respected, because they are. That we genuinely need them in this world, and the world will be a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I so appreciate you bringing all of that out. And it's something, again, that, you know, is kind of the reason for the show and is kind of the reason for the book, is because, which I didn't explain earlier, when I was 9, I knew I wanted to be a classroom teacher, but I wanted to teach typical kids, general education kids.
Yeah.
And throughout that time, until around the age of 25, 26, every so often I would have a thought pop into my head of teaching special education students. And I always had reasons. Oh, I'm going to be too easy on them. I'm not going to have high enough expectations. I'm not going to know anything. I don't know how to work with them, you know, and I they were in a category, and I never took the time to realize each person is a person and an individual. And it was around, you know, like I said, 25, 26, somewhere in there, where I said, I want to work with special education students, because of experiences that I had had along the way that I didn't even necessarily realize that I was working with those kids. And so I do this in the book because I want other people's perspectives to be broadened faster than what mine were. We don't have time for everybody to wait 20 years. Well, not 20 years, but.
Well, but how much did you learn in that lifetime after you started teaching with the special education kids? I mean, you must have learned so much from that experience, from doing that, from the kids themselves. People don't have that, you know, advantage. Other people don't get to spend time with that many children and learn from them. So we need to do it for them. We need to accelerate the information.
Yeah. And you know, there are so many things that you talked about are looked at in childhood as weaknesses or deficits. But when the person becomes an adult, those are looked at as strengths in the business world.
Yep, absolutely.
And so we most definitely need to be praising the perfectionist in the sense, now, I mean, we don't want it to be to where it is anxiety inducing, but the fact that, yeah, they are going to catch all those details. They are going to make sure that a project is started and completed well.
Absolutely.
You know, they're not going to just, oh, I'm done. You know, I'm not going to mess with it anymore. It's good enough. You know, those are qualities that businesses want. And
yet we
here in the United States, and that, you know, I don't know what it's like there, but I don't think we do a good enough job of recognizing how and nurturing those traits to bring them to their fullest potential.
I agree. And that's part of why I want to get neurodiversity talked about everywhere, because there's so much good to come out of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it does. And the movement has picked up so much since I started the business, and very thankful for that, but there's still a lot more work to do. Because you're right, the things that you're talking about with the children, they need to be nurtured. The, you know, all the things that they're gonna need when they're older, that are gonna help their lives, they need to be nurtured when they're young. And instead they're treated, you know, treated like they're, I don't know, they've got to be squashed, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of the behaviors, I know that's a big issue in schools. And I understand that, you know, most of my classroom, I never had more than 10 kids at a time. And with 10 kids, I often at least had one other adult in there with me. But saying that, each of those 10 kids was doing something different, you know, versus a gen ed classroom where there would be 20 kids or 30 kids or in some places even more than that, which is insane, because nobody's really getting a great education at that point. But everybody was on the same lesson. So even though there were more kids, it was one lesson that had to be managed, but you still had 20 kids worth of behaviors.
How could that be? How could 20 children have the same learning style?
Right? And it is unfortunate. And, you know, there is, in the education, in any world, in any field, you do have to work to the masses. And there are, you know, enough similarities with about 80% of the population that's where this, you know, education system has developed and come to. And it does work for, like I said, about 80%. But then you have 20% that
fall through the cracks.
And they need to have something different. We often fixate too much on the 80% and want to send that other 20% out of the room.
Yeah.
And
there's still 20%. Even if it was 1%, like, what do you do with that 1%? They're still valid. They still need the education or the help or support. That's one reason why my kids, they wouldn't be able to go to, they couldn't go to the special education class. They're brighter than most, but my daughter wouldn't be able to sit through a lesson. Like, she just, not without breaking something. And my son, he would need one-on-one support because his anxiety is that great. He has to learn everything organically. So if I try and present him something new, his anxiety kicks in right away. He starts to melt down. So everything for him is organic bit by bit. I have to just introduce things in games and just really, really slowly. So he thinks he's coming to it just as part of his life. Can't sit down and teach him anything. So, and he's so bright. The kid can spell any word he's ever seen.
Wow.
He's been reading since he was 3. He's never had to read out loud. He's always just read in his head. He can type like you wouldn't believe. And not, he's a finger pecker, not like proper typing, but he is as fast as me typing. So he's got these skills that have just come naturally to him.
Right.
And if I tried to teach him to read or to spell, I would have been shut down so fast.
Yeah. And you're right. The school system sadly would have squashed him.
Mm, absolutely.
Because they honestly, well, I shouldn't say that because I don't know what Australia is like, right. But I know the classrooms and the school districts and what I know here in the United States. Yeah. No one would have given him the privilege to learn in the way that he learns. And they wouldn't have let him be at the pace that he needs to be at and to do the things that he needed to do.
Yeah. And if he could sit in a classroom with kids and there's a lesson on the board and they say, okay, here's the lesson, now go ahead and finish it. There's absolutely no way he'd be able to do it.
Yeah.
Not even for a minute. And he'd melt down.
Yeah. Well, kudos to you for recognizing that and changing your life to be able to homeschool them. And it's already, we're almost at an hour already. And I could talk to you for many more, but I want to honor your time and let you get back to the kids. And
no, my husband's out there with both of them. I think they're playing Xbox or something.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. And you're getting ready to start your day versus me where my day is ending. So it's time for me to go have dinner or go make dinner. I'm not sure which I'm doing. And, you know, head off to bed. But Sally, I so appreciate what you are doing there in Australia and the fact that it's worldwide, you know, that the awareness is happening, and I will most certainly be ordering something. Most likely, I'm a big hoodie person, so I'll most likely be getting the hoodie. The fact that you have gotten so far in such a short amount of time is nothing short of amazing, in my opinion. And
it speaks to the fact that it's necessary, you know, that this is needed. So that's all I keep thinking. I think it's sure I've done well and I'm proud of myself, but the fact that it has gotten this big, it goes to show there was a gap and I'm filling it.
Yeah, that's very true. That's a good way to look at it. Well, thank you very, very much for coming on. I wish you all the best. If you ever get to the States or if I ever get to Australia, I hope sometime that we can meet in person. I would love to see Carmi in person and meet Ollie as well. She seems like an absolute doll and somebody that I would get along with very well.
She is. She's very fun to be around.
Yeah, she definitely seems like that. And she seems to be comfortable in her own skin, which is just incredible. And again, kudos to you for teaching her to be comfortable in her own skin.
When she got her autism diagnosis, she actually celebrated. She was very, very happy. So just to know more of who she is, and she's not scared of it at all, you know, because she's had a brother who was diagnosed a lot earlier.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We didn't even talk about that, this one went this and this one got that and that and that and that. Yeah. And how it kind of was a stair step for you a little bit, but yeah. Well, again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And
you're welcome. Thank you.
I will make sure to put ND Renegade. It's just ndrenegade.com. In the chat, but we will make sure that that gets in there. And your website is beautiful, and I'm just so thankful. So have a great rest of your day, and I will see you hopefully again sometime.
Thank you, Shelley.
Yep.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, SHELLEYKENOW.